Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Chenjerai Kumanyika. He is an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. Hi, Chenjerai.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks for joining us. Greek elections resulted in a second win for Syriza party leader Alexis Tsipras on Sunday. The embattled prime minister had faced growing uncertainty over his mandate after a stunning victory on an anti-austerity platform earlier this year and then a capitulation to creditors. The snap elections yesterday were a major risk and pollsters had been unable to predict a clear victory. But Mr. Tsipras's party emerged with a plurality of votes. Still, only 56% of Greek voters turned out to cast ballots, much lower than in the two elections earlier this year. In his victory speech, Tsipras said, "The mandate that the Greek people gave us is crystal clear to get rid of the wickedness and the regime of corruption and intertwined interests that have ruled the country for years." Syriza will likely form a coalition with the same party it had before, a right-wing populist party called Independent Greeks. Well, Chandra, it's strange that even Tsipras's language has changed from anti-austerity to tackling corruption, which is this vague catch-all phrase that so many politicians rely on. Are you disappointed by this turn in Greece, given how excited the left was over Syriza's initial win?
I think it is a little disappointing. Syriza showed great potential and served as an example of a radical left refusing to cede the realm of electoral politics to the exploitative austerity politics of the far right. But what I think we learn from this is that that kind of progressive threat to the status quo in Greece and elsewhere is often challenged by co-optation of that potential into a centrist kind of party. And as you pointed out, the language of corruption is indeed deeply problematic because it joins with the rhetoric of austerity that we've seen about Greece. Greece's problems in this narrative are mostly about corrupt individuals rather than an economic system that is a result of historical factors that won't be fixed by an increasingly entrenched austerity approach.
Here in the United States, Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson is facing a major backlash over Islamophobic comments that he made to the press. In conversation with NBC's Chuck Todd, Carson, who's African-American, said, "I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that." To that, Representative Keith Ellison, the first Muslim in Congress, who is also African-American, responded by issuing a statement saying, "The freedom of religion is a founding principle of our nation. For Ben Carson, Donald Trump, or any other Republican politician to suggest that someone of any faith is unfit for office is out of touch with who we are as a people. Every American should be disturbed that these national figures are engaging in and tolerating blatant acts of religious bigotry," said Carson. Even fellow Republicans Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich denounced Carson's statement. So far, Carson is standing by them. Chandra, it's better we see just who these candidates are so far ahead of the primary so that we know where they're coming from, right?
Right. But, well, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't have minded seeing Carson or Trump as the Republican nominee, thereby expediting the demise of that party. But, you know, I just want to point out the hateful rhetoric has real consequences. When we talk about, we can't forget Scott and Steve Leader, who are inspired by Trump to urinate on a homeless man a couple of weeks ago, then hit him in the head, punch several times, hit him in the head with a metal pole, and then walk away laughing. But, you know, I think when we think about Carson, we have his particular individual views, but we have to keep coming back to the fact that a disturbing amount of Americans agree with this. You know, according to a survey by Public Religion Research Institute and issued in conjunction with the Brookings Institution, 47% of Americans say they believe Muslim and American values are incompatible, and it can be broken down even further by political affiliation. 40% of Democrats say they believe that, as well as 66% of Tea Party members. And, you know, it's just, you know, 30% of Americans believe Muslims ultimately want to establish Sharia law as the law of the land. I mean, these are deeply worrisome numbers. So it's good. In a way, it's good that these things are coming out now because they allow for that conversation to happen sort of unshackled from the coded racial language that we've seen before.
And finally, actor Viola Davis made movie history last night when she became the first Black woman to win an Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series. Davis plays the implacable criminal defense attorney and law professor Annalise Keating in the Shonda Rhimes series, How to Get Away with Murder. In her acceptance speech, Davis said, "The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there." She also quoted civil rights icon Harriet Tubman. Quote, "In my mind, I see a line, and over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white women with their arms stretched out to me over that line. but I can't seem to get there no how. I can't seem to get over that line. Davis immediately came under fire for speaking out by white actress Nancy Lee Grahn from General Hospital, who tweeted, "Emmy's not venue for racial opportunity, all women belittled." Grahn later apologized, adding, I never mean to diminish her accomplishment. I wish I could get her roles. Chinjoy, how important was Davis's speech? I mean, she boldly called Hollywood out instead of just quietly accepting her award.
That's right. And it's really hard to make this kind of speech. There's tremendous political, cultural, and economic pressure not to do so in that context. You also don't have much time and you want to thank your colleagues. But Davis negotiated those things in a beautiful way and managed to launch her critique. And I really appreciated that her critique was a systemic one that focused on the lack of opportunity for other women of color rather than focusing on her own individual talents. You know, in some ways, what she said was not unlike Chris Rock's insight that these kind of moments are not necessarily representative of black progress as much as they're representative of white progress. And there, it's really a narrative of the progress of, Hollywood recognizing the talent that's always been there. And unfortunately, they're probably recognizing it now due to the fact that, you know, people like Shonda Rhimes have made it undeniable that it's economically profitable.
Well, Chinjoy, thanks as always for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Chinjoy Komanyika is an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. And by the way, if you missed last week's banned broadcasts of Uprising on Thursday and Friday, which our general manager has decided not to air, you can visit UprisingWithSonali.com to listen to them. We'll be right back after this break.